It's National Bike Month. Where are you heading on your wheels? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our bike show, we'll talk about e-bikes and what kind of gear is right for you, plus the resources available to cyclists and what Cincinnati is doing to become more bike-friendly. And we have experts here to answer your questions about bike maintenance and getting around. Joining me now are Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager, Caitlin Sparks, City of Cincinnati Innovation Team Leader Joshua Pine, Mobo Bicycle Co-op Youth Coordinator Kat Ruger, and owner of the Garage OTR, Sean Jenkins. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joshua, explain this new e-bike partnership between the city and the Garage OTR. How does it work? What's the idea behind it?
Thanks, Lucy. We're really excited to launch this today, so glad to be on the show to share out. The core of this program is we're launching an e-bike incentive program structured as a subsidized financing model. So what that means is Cincinnati residents who are at least 18 years old can go to the Garage OTR bike shop located downtown. They can take a look at the range of e-bikes that are available there. And when they're ready to purchase, rather than having to pay that full amount up front, they'll be able to divide their costs into 12 equal payments. So interest-free installment plans over a 12-month period. Kind of the inspiration behind this, we were designing this program prior to the gas prices spiking as high as they have, but it's certainly an opportune moment that we have here. And just recognizing the transportation burden that many Cincinnati residents are facing, we're trying to design this program to help make purchasing e-bikes a little bit easier.
Okay. And Sean, what is an e-bike? How's it different from a traditional bike?
An electric bike is going to be assisted by a motor powered by a battery. Most bikes are going to be pedal assist only. So you got to be turning the crank for the bike to go forward to get assist from the bike. But there's also some throttle available out there as well. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get into the different classes of e-bikes.
Well, tell us about those, Sean, those different classes of e-bikes. I understand. And what should people be thinking about if they're considering buying an electric bike?
So there's three classes currently, class one, two, and three. Class one and class three are going to be pedal assist only options. Class one being maximum speed of 20 miles per hour. Class three being a maximum speed of 28 miles per hour. Class two bike means it does have a throttle. Your maximum speed with a throttle assist, if you're not pedaling, is going to be 20 miles an hour. Some of the throttle bikes do have a pedal assist capability of 28 miles an hour. You're probably going to want to look for a class one bike. It's going to be the most friendly for coexisting with other riders, riding the Loveland Trail or any of the other systems. Class one is going to be the most convenient and best to coexist.
Yeah. And we talked about dividing the cost of this into 12 payments, the city program. How expensive are these bikes?
E-bikes start at new in our store at about $1,700 and go up. The bulk of the bikes are going to be between $2,500 and $4,000. The focus of this program are bikes that are $3,000 and less.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Caitlin, how fast can these e-bikes really go? I read that some of these can be hacked or modified to go like 55 miles an hour, which I am a worrywart mom. That does not sound safe. Mm-hmm. What's the deal there?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think a big concern for a lot of people. I'm seeing national webinars right now about what is allowed on our trails and how e-bikes have kind of gotten out of control, honestly. And I think it's just the way that some of these manufacturers are selling and labeling bikes, which sometimes can be false. I think it was a really good description of class one through three. Those are typically allowed on our trails, our multi-use trails. So like
even the ones that can go up to 28 miles an hour are allowed typically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and some trails will have special signs if that's not the case. They'll note that on the trail signage. Some of them are way too fast, and they're essentially motorbikes, little motorcycles, and they have a drivetrain and pedals that make it look like a bicycle. But unfortunately, they are very dangerous to have on multi-use shared paths and should be used on a roadway system.
Mm-hmm. Joshua, those are not the kind of bikes that are part of this program, I guess?
That's correct. And I think looking nationally, there's been a kind of trend among cities that are promoting e-bike incentive programs. Some of them are focused online. Some of them have this focus on local retail. I think for us, given this prevalence of bikes on the road that are called e-bikes, really function like electric motorcycles, for us was really the impetus behind wanting to partner with a local bike shop here locally to make sure that our residents were getting high-quality bikes for their own safety, but also for other people on the road. And I think the other piece in addition to that is maintaining an e-bike. It's one thing to purchase one, but to have that maintenance piece. And so we're really excited to partner with the Garage OTR that has both the capability to sell bikes, but also maintain and service them as well, which I think is really important for safety reasons.
Yeah. It's our bike show for the full hour today. Do you have questions or comments for our experts? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Kat, have you ridden an e-bike? I'm wondering if they handle differently than a traditional bike.
Sure, that's a great question, Lucy. I have ridden a red bike on a pretty regular basis when I don't want to lock my normal bike up, and feels like I'm on a horse sometimes. It's a lot more weight, but the center of gravity is quite low, so it does feel very stable and often helps me conserve my energy if I'm going across town and don't want to arrive sweaty.
Mm-hmm. And so this is an electric e-bike, or mm-hmm. red bike that you've
Correct.
Been riding. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is that lower center of gravity? Does it take a minute to get used to that?
Yeah. When I first get on it, it's a lot heavier than the bike that I would normally ride. But because of how low that is, I do feel quite stable. I feel like I have more balance than maybe getting on a bike that's new to me. It just makes for a really lovely ride where I can pay attention to my surroundings and not have to worry as much about the handling.
Okay. Another worry wart question. What about helmets? Do you need a different type of helmet if you're using an e-bike instead of a traditional bike, Sean?
Most of the time, no. There are some Class 3 certified helmets out there if you plan on going at the higher speeds that are a little heavier helmet. But usually just a regular certified helmet will do fine.
Okay. What is the maintenance like, and how often do you have to replace batteries on an e-bike?
So it's a bike. The heart and soul of the unit is a bike. So, and that's usually the systems that you're servicing. The battery, the motor, and controller, usually only worry about those when something goes wrong rather than upkeep. So the upkeep is, you know, the chain, the tires, air pressure, grips, anything that the rider's touching mm-hmm. that you normally service, you'd service in this case as well.
Does the battery have to be charged?
It does. Just plugs into a standard 110 outlet in the house. Mm-hmm. Charges rather quickly.
Okay. Do any of the rest of you own e-bikes?
I do. I have a cargo e-bike, so I use it to take my kids to school and bike to work most days.
Wow, curve buster, Joshua. Do the kids love that?
The kids love it. It's called an Urban Aero, so it's kind of a big bucket out in the front. And so we got a nice little cover on the thing, so they're weatherproofed when it's either raining or snowing outside. It's just a lovely
Dad,
way to get to town.
You're not weatherproofed.
I am not weatherproofed, not as well, but it's, yeah, I love biking around Cincinnati. It's a delightful way to get around town.
Okay. Where you were talking before, Caitlin, about where you can the trails that you can ride, use these electric bikes on. Mm-hmm. Where else can you ride them around town? Any of you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're capable of being ridden all over town, wherever you would ride your other bicycles. You know, we have a growing network of bike lanes that put people on road, but it's in a designated space that's separated from cars. So I think the trail system, where, you know, and ideally in the future, we'll have a on-road bikeway system that connects very nicely and seamlessly with our trail system.
Yeah,
I would say there's ways to get around town. I would also want to plug Tri-State Trails. Low stress bike map is a great way to figure out how to get around town. I think, like, speaking personally, for my bike commute, I'll bike part of the way on the Wasson Way Trail, which is delightful to have that bike infrastructure. I'll go along Madison where there's a bike lane on part of it. And then part of my bike route is on Gilbert where there isn't a bike lane right now. And you can certainly feel the difference. And so I think part of what I'm excited by with this program is pairing it with what the city's already doing in terms of investing in bike infrastructure, a new complete streets project coming to Gilbert here soon. So I am excited both professionally and personally for that rollout.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that a little later. Sean, did you want to add to where you can ride these e-bikes?
Yeah. So any bike has a right to the entire lane. Anywhere in town, despite what you might hear somewhere else. E-bikes might make it a little bit easier to coexist with that traffic because you're able to have a higher average speed. So you're able to get off the line and become part of the traffic flow a little bit easier. And then I'm going to second Tri-State Trail's wonderful resource online. There's a living, breathing version of that map at tristatetrails.org. And then you can pick up printed copies at bike shops around town.
Yeah. And Kat, you were talking about, excuse me, when you choose to ride an e-bike instead of the bike that you own, when you get an e-bike, red bike, what factors into your decision there?
That's a good question. I love my Red Bike membership. It is the best thing that I've gotten since moving to Cincinnati because I can decide how convenient I want my commute to be sometimes. I can look at my low stress bike map, decide, okay, do I have a really good route to get there easily? Is it going to be steep? Do I have a good place to lock up? Am I going to be in a rush once I get there and want to save a little bit of time? All of those factors will help me decide. Am I going to get on my bike, get a good workout, but maybe take a little bit longer? Or should I get on a red bike, have that boost for some of our steep hills, not have to worry about locking it up and just finding a dock instead, and then be able to maybe bus home or get a ride with a friend so that I can be more flexible with my day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Kat, this low stress map has come up a couple times already during the conversation.
These folks are doing my job for me.
That's so, right. Look at you. All. You're surrounded by friends, clearly.
Yes, I am.
Clearly. Tell us about that. Is that about avoiding hills? What's the low stress part of the low stress map?
Yeah. So I always like to say, until we have the trail and bikeway network of our dreams, this is a really helpful tool for people to just use their front door as the trailhead. You can take a look at the printed copy. We have a big map that, like we were saying, you can pick up at bike shops and coffee shops. You can also request to have a stack delivered to your business. We're happy to share them. But yeah, you can open up the printed map. We have a Cincinnati side and a Northern Kentucky side. And we have, with the help of folks who commute on a regular basis, so people in this room have helped build this map and keep it up to date. We ask them what streets they choose, you know, to get to work or to school or wherever they need to go. And then we use that. We have a bit of a criteria to think about, like, what is the infrastructure like? What are the speeds like? And how stressful does it actually feel? And then we label the streets that are low stress in green, and then we have high stress streets labeled in gold. We do have our hills labeled. And then the trail system that exists today is also on the map. It's a really great tool. It's printed, and it's also online. So you can find it at tristatetrails.org. And the online map has all sorts of additional layers, like red bike stations, water fountains, things like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we got a question from Rich. Rich asks, I walk on sidewalks and multi-use sidewalks, and people, especially kids, go whizzing by on their e-bikes and don't even call out on your left as they approach from behind. Is there any way to control, police these riders, similar to how regular bicycle and pedestrian paths are managed? I don't know who wants to weigh in on that.
Wow. I mean, like I said, this has been like a hot topic of discussion lately. There are advocacy groups thinking about it, everyday folks who are trying to use a multi-use trail. We're, I think, collectively trying to figure out what is the best next step. And I do think that something should be done about the people who are selling these bikes and labeling them incorrectly as e-bikes. That's a big first problem. And then, you know, at Tri-State Trails, we're often talking about trail etiquette for people on foot and on bikes. One of those things is, yes, to shout out, like, hey, I'm going to be passing you. We're also big advocates of bike bells, any sort of, like, sign, you know, that you can give your fellow trail users is really helpful. But enforcement, I don't know what we can do about that, honestly. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the answer, but, you know, having conversations about trail etiquette, I think having signage that says, like, there's a speed limit on this trail, you know, like, I think a safe speed is under 20 miles an hour. And even that can be very uncomfortable if you're passed by a bike going that speed. I think it's something that we should work on as a community. And the conversation continues. I don't know. Yeah. What have you guys heard?
Sean?
Just recently, National Bike Dealers Association and People for Bikes, which their website is peopleforbikes.org, announced a national partnership to try to deal with this emerging trend of e-moto. Mm-hmm. So I don't know this gentleman's case. It might have been an e-bike. It might have been something faster. If it's something faster, it's not an e-bike.
That's what you just referred to as an e-moto. So what's that?
So something that's faster than 28 miles an hour. Some of them are capable of 35, 50. We're seeing 60, 70 mile an hour bikes now. And that's not an e-bike. And when we very first started talking about the different classes, I kind of alluded to currently these are the classes. Because I really have a feeling that we're going to see additional legislation specifically for this e-moto class. Because right now they're falling in a gray area. So unless municipalities have very specific rules on the books for these, then it's hard to enforce it. California, Oregon, Texas, Florida are starting to take a harder look. And those tend to be the leading states where things trickled down a little bit. And then with the Mechanics Association and People for Bikes getting involved, I think we'll see a push in the right direction that's best for all the users of the trails so that we are on the same page with transparency.
Mm-hmm. Is that etiquette something that you talk about with customers when they're buying an e-bike? Like, hey, just this is what we like to see and this is how we like folks to behave when you're on a mixed-use kind of trail or path?
We do, but what's more encouraging is people are coming in more educated about it. So they know the difference between a class 1, 2, 3 bike. They want to get what's the best option. Right now, the most restriction is national parks. Some of the national parks are very, very specific about class 1 bikes. Mm-hmm. And we have people coming in with RVs that do a lot of travel, and they're aware of that, and that's what they're looking for. So we weren't getting that kind of educated consumer 3 and 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We'll continue our bike show after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our bike show. My guests are City of Cincinnati Innovation Team Leader Joshua Pine, Mobo Bicycle Co-op Youth Coordinator Kat Ruger, owner of the Garage OTR Sean Jenkins, and Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager Caitlin Sparks. If you've got questions for them or if you have comments about using your bike to get around the region, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we do have a caller on the line. Hey, Dan, thanks for calling and thanks for your patience. What's your question?
Hi, Lucy, and hi, everybody. I'm wondering about protected bike lanes in OTR specifically, if there are anything in the works for protected bike lanes other than the Central Parkway line. I find that when I'm riding around downtown with my kid, I have trouble finding ways to get, say, from Findlay Market down to Fountain Square or the banks. Wondering what if there are any plans in the works for that. And I will take my answer off the air.
Wonderful. That's a great question. Thanks so much, Dan. Joshua, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, my understanding right now, I wish there were more. I think kind of the core investment right now is kind of that Central Parkway, as Dan alluded to. I know there's been some studies around certain segments. I think Plum Street, for example, I think there was a recent study underway right now just to see what calming measures could take place there. I'm not aware of any other active discussions, but I think it's certainly something that we'd love to see more of and appreciate people advocating for more bike lanes. And I think certainly hope as part of this program, I think oftentimes protected bike lane conversations get into a little bit of this chicken and egg conversation of, are there enough cyclists on the road to justify a protected bike lane? But you don't see cyclists because there aren't a protected bike lane to be there. So I think the hope of this program is as we get more cyclists out there, they become more educated, aware, and advocating for the needs that they have. I think hopefully city council and the city will continue to make those investments.
Yeah. Well, let me ask another question about protected bike lanes, because I know, we were talking about this in our preparation meeting. And one of our colleagues said, you know, I just don't see a lot of people using the protected bike lanes that are there. I don't know if that's part of the chicken and egg thing. It's like you need more of them so they connect everywhere so people feel comfortable using them. Caitlin, you're nodding your head. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, just as Josh was saying that, like, we want to see more advocates, people who are on their bikes. We are craving them. And having them connected is a really important piece of that, too. So, you know, Cincinnati is honestly, like, I think a bit behind, but we're also, like, seeing more momentum than we have in such a long time. The Central Parkway protected bike lane is so special, and to have that much space dedicated to cyclists is unique and wonderful, and I'm so thankful for it on a personal level. And I think that there are a lot of cyclists using it. I'm not using it every day for commuting, but like on the weekends, going down to Mobo and Northside, every time I'm on there, I see other cyclists. So I'm encouraged by that. And yeah, I do think like advocating, getting in touch with our city council members, getting involved with group rides and other bike groups is a great first step for folks. But yeah, we know that we need more. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and especially with those hills that we were talking about. Yeah. That's a big commitment if you know you're going to be riding up and down a hill and you might want a little protected bike lane there to make you feel safer. We talked about the difference between an e-bike and an e-moto. Joshua, we talked about this a little bit too, but I just want to reinforce it. What do you think is the recommended speed, even for a genuine e-bike, when you're talking about in bike lanes, on trails? I guess I'm a bit of a worrywart. Like I've said before, how do you really stay safe on these when you can go those faster speeds than maybe you could pedal alone?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think especially for this kind of new incentive program that we're rolling out, I think we're very much looking for those kind of class one and class two, perhaps, but really thinking on that 20-mile an hour limit, especially in those shared spaces. I think as cyclists kind of bike on the road with cars as well, I think a point that Sean made earlier, I think an advantage of an e-bike, especially on hills, is where you're not going the speed of traffic, but you're going closer to the speed of traffic than you would be if you're going up a hill or in a different spot. And I think, not that you'd be going fast like 40, 50 miles an hour, but if you're getting closer to, say, 15, 18 miles an hour going up a hill, it's actually a lot safer for you. If a car is making a turn, if they see you on the road, if you're going a little bit faster, I think that's an advantage of an e-bike, is getting that right speed. And I think around somewhere between that 15 to 20 miles an hour, especially when you're on the road, I think is a real benefit of an e-bike in general. I think that's a safe range to be in.
Yeah. Kat, what do you recommend on trails? And Caitlin can weigh in on this too, but if they can go up to 20 miles an hour, but you're on a shared use trail, I imagine that can feel pretty fast if you're walking, because you're not walking anywhere close to that. So what do you think makes sense on a shared use trail kind of situation?
Certainly. On a shared use trail, I would ride an e-bike the speed that you would ride an analog bike normally. So especially on the Wasson Way, where people are walking, running, often have headphones on, trying to stay in that like 13, 15 mile an hour range so that you have enough time as you're passing someone to ring that bell to say on your left and make sure they've heard you, not just whiz by and have the potential for a crash there.
Yeah. Is that what you're thinking too, Caitlin?
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think the 13 to 15 is a safe space, like Kat was saying, so that you can make a good, safe decision if something, you know, if a person were to jump to the side because, you know, a squirrel scared them on the trail, you would have enough time to respond to that unpredictable situation. And, you know, and I think red bikes maybe go 17 max, and that feels good and mm-hmm. enough. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Important to think about the squirrel factor.
Yes. Watch out for those tricky squirrels. Yeah. They'll jump out at you.
Yeah. Squirrels, all kinds of critters out there. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about protected bike lanes. I saw this study of bike share use in New York City. Now, of course, this is New York City, much bigger, many more people on bikes, but it found an 18% increase in bike share trips in the 12 months after protected bike lanes were installed. I mean, how much safer do these lanes make riders feel? And, you know, talk more about how you're seeing them being used locally Joshua, maybe I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference. I think that those data numbers don't surprise me, and I think is certainly a piece. I think going back to the kid piece as well, and for our youth, especially on analog bikes, I think certainly protected bike lanes are great for all ages, but I think especially for my daughter who's 5 and in kindergarten, I'd love for her eventually when she's old enough to be able to bike to school, and I think would in no way feel safe with her biking on the road. But we currently live on the Wasson Way Trail, and there's a nice protected bike lane on Edwards getting to her school. And I can envision a scenario if there's more of those connected bike lanes that make it easier, once again, both for adults, but also for kids, if we are trying to make it safer for kids to be outside, to engage in healthy and active lifestyles on analog bikes. Making these protected bike lane investments are a really critical piece of that puzzle.
Yeah. Sean, do you see a lot of people using the protected bike lanes when you're out biking around?
Absolutely. And I'm not surprised by the data either. It's all about confidence, I think, in both these situations. So as a pedestrian walker, you don't want to worry about collision. It's about coexisting with the biker and the etiquette we talked about. And then as the biker in traffic, same thing. So the greater the confidence, the more often you're going to go out, and you get that with the protected bike lane.
Yeah. Well, we got a question from Suzanne. Suzanne asks, Caitlin mentioned needing more advocacy. As a medium engaged person in our cycling community, I never know where to go when I have an idea, a question, or a suggestion. What's the best route to advocate for bikes?
That's a great question. So definitely reach out to Tri-State Trails. All of our staff would be thrilled to talk to Suzanne. And then any of these organizations that are here at the table, Mobo Bicycle Co-op is an excellent place to learn about working on your bike, but also, engaging youth. Kat works with them on a weekly basis. Going directly to your city council members is, I just can't say that enough. Like, start to build a relationship with who's in office and who's on staff as well. They're working on our behalf and making decisions for us. Queen City Bike is another place. Pleasant Streets is a Pleasant Ridge organization. On our Tri-State Trails website, we have a Get Involved page. That's where I have a lot of bicycle advocacy organizations listed with their websites and their social media. So I'd say definitely get in touch with me, Suzanne. Let's have a conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lots of great tips. Well, Kat, we were just talking about, Joshua was just talking about hoping that his little girl can one day be in a protected bike lane and get herself to elementary school. I just heard of something called a bike bus. Kat, explain what that is and what you're seeing locally.
Sure. A bike bus is a legitimate form of school transportation where a PE teacher, family members, neighbors lead a weekly, like, critical mass ride where they have one simple route to school, but like a school bus, kids can get on at different stops closest to their homes and safely ride to school with a group of their peers. It's a great way to get out Wiggles at the start of the day, talk to folks, know your neighborhood well. And in many states, certainly including Oregon, the school districts have actually been able to flex their transit dollars to get kids bikes, helmets, pay the PE teacher, and make it a really sustainable part of their school district.
Oh my gosh. So it's like a little caravan where kids can kind of hop in where it makes sense for them.
Definitely.
Are those growing in popularity? There's one in Pleasant Ridge, right?
Yep. And that one just started up. I think they're in week 2, maybe 3 this Friday morning. I've heard a lot of different folks from different neighborhoods going, oh, I think this is a good idea. But seeing that someone's finally doing it, I'm hoping will make it easier for others to jump on board.
Yeah. Joshua, you are nodding vigorously.
Bike buses. I think it's a great idea. And I think tying that thread back to the protected bike lane piece, I think one thing that our team's looking at now that we got this e-bike pilot, our next pilot that we're discussing with Caitlin as well, is the idea of open streets, kind of beyond permanent structured investment in protected bike lanes, which we certainly need. How can we, especially as the city, invest in these kind of temporary ad hoc measures? So like with the bike bus, like could the city help to put out traffic safety cones. Maybe we don't turn it into an official bike lane, but for Pleasant Ridge, Montessori, like, can we put out some lanes on Montgomery, put out some cones, temporarily turn the street into a bike route for kids? I think we do this for the Flying Pig Marathon just last week. I think we have this sense of temporarily and cost efficiently reallocating our space for different uses. And I think that ties back to the advocate piece as well. I know building protected bike lanes is a long-term and costly investment that we certainly need to be making. But while we do that kind of in parallel, how can we think about more creative, tactical, strategic ways to, I think going back to the OTR question, like even if we don't have permanent protected bike lanes now, are there ways that we can temporarily designate a street as a bike lane with paint and safety cones and other things like that?
Yeah. You just used the term open streets. Can you talk more about that? What is that?
Sure. I think it's a pretty broad concept. I think it was certainly happened prior to the pandemic, but I think it was popularized a lot during the COVID-19 pandemic, where cities realized, whether for outside dining, for other uses, how can we temporarily reallocate street space, whether for parking or driving? Can we reclaim the street either as an extension of the sidewalk? Could we use it as a temporary bike path? So I think open streets can mean a lot of different things. It could mean like opening day parade, I think, is a great example of a really large scale open street event. What is normally a segment of the street dedicated for cars, how can we turn that into a celebration for people and walking and other types of uses? So I think there's a lot of different applications. I think bike buses is a great application of that. Like, how do we, maybe not for the full time, but like along that Montgomery route and Pleasant Ridge, like, could we temporarily use some safety cones, redesignate the street as something other than just for car travel?
Yeah. Sean, can you talk about what you hear from maybe parents who come into your shop looking for ways for their kids to get to school or get around? Can you talk to more about what you're hearing in terms of demand and that sort of thing?
We don't sell any e-bikes for kids. We do have some scooters or one-wheel transportation that can make good options. But I do see families coming in that, 12 to 15 age group looking for these faster bikes. I explained to them that those are not e-bikes. Sometimes they're surprised and they look at Johnny and say, "You didn't tell me it went that fast." and other times they want to know where they can get the bike for the child. So I welcome the legislation so that, everyone can be on the same page. I know like in states like California, they're holding parents responsible for these decisions now, which if it continues to be a problem, might have to be something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will be back for the final lap of our bike show after a short break. If you've got questions, now is the time to call. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our bike show and a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are Mobo Bicycle Co-op Youth Coordinator Kat Ruger, owner of the Garage OTR, Sean Jenkins, Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager, Caitlin Sparks, and City of Cincinnati Innovation Team Leader, Joshua Pine. They are ready to answer your questions, so give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we have a caller on the line. Hi, Keith. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi. It's a comment / question. This is the season where in Europe the cycling races are beginning. The one in Italy is just launched, and now they're, the Tour de France will be coming up pretty soon. And so I was just curious if we do anything like that around here in the Cincinnati area, because, we have some, nice landscape and rolling hills, and, I think a cycling event would, capture the attention of the public. So I was just kind of curious about the ideas that the panel might have. And I'll take my answer offline.
Okay, thanks, Keith. Right. Yeah, like a Tour de Pig. Do we have what do we have going on there?
Yes, Lucy, we do have a tour. I'm wearing the jersey from 2023. This will be the fourth year for the Tour de Crown.
Tour de Crown.
Yes.
Explain what that is for people.
So one of Tri-State Trail's bigger trail projects is the Crown, which is the Cincinnati Riding or Walking Network. And this is a multi-use paved trail network. It's connecting the trail systems that we've had for a long time, like the Lunkin Airport Loop, the Ohio River Trail, Little Miami Scenic Trail. And then we're working with all sorts of partners, the City of Cincinnati, Great Parks of Hamilton County, and then several, you know, Columbia Township, Village of Marymount, so many partners, honestly, to connect this trail, all of the trails that we have, and to make a loop. It'll be a 34-mile loop when it's finished. We're about 24 miles into that. And every single year, we have new trail segments coming online. It's really happening quickly. There's so many people that are seeing the benefit of a connected trail system. So the Tour de Crown is an opportunity for people of all ages and abilities to get on their bike and ride a very curated, very safe ride. We have three route options, a 34-mile route, which would take you on the entire Crown Loop, and then two shorter options, a 17.5 and a 9-mile route. And we send folks out with volunteers who are avid cyclists, who know this route very well, and they ride it together. And yeah, it all starts and ends at 50 West Brewery. And it's a fundraiser for Tri-State Trails and for the Crown.
Okay. And yeah. Where can Keith find out more information about that?
Tristatetrails.org or tourdecrown.org.
Okay.
Yes.
We also got a question from Mary. She asks, where can I learn how to do simple fixes on my e-bike? Let's go to Kat with that one.
Hi, you can go to Mobo Bicycle Co-op, which is over in Northside on Knowlton, right by the transit center. It's in the Old Florist, and it is Ohio's oldest bike co-op. You can come in on a Sunday, get yourself a membership for $20 or 2 hours of volunteering, and then a ton of volunteer mechanics will talk you through the repairs. So they won't do it for you. You don't drop your bike off, but you'll leave knowing how to do it at home and hopefully be feeling more comfortable with your bike.
And that's for e-bikes or traditional bikes?
For those simple fixes. Yeah. If you're coming in needing a battery worked on or a controller, go to Sean.
Yeah. Sean is smiling at that recommendation. Yes. Okay. Okay. Super. Well, we were talking about the adorable bike buses before the break. It seems like, Caitlin, that really makes bike commuting more accessible for riders of all ages. How important is that, and how big a deal is bike commuting in Cincinnati generally?
Mm-hmm. I love the bike bus. I think we're all big fans of that bike bus concept. It's such a joy to see young people getting so much out of riding bikes together, and then the support of the parents and the school. It's just a magical thing. So I love that bike buses and also traffic gardens, which is another tool to help young people learn bicycle handling skills and also how to maybe think about riding in traffic in the future when it's safe for them. But yeah, starting the kids young is such an important part of this. I think about culture change and what will it take for Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky to become a bike-friendly, enthusiastic community. And I think, yeah, starting with the kids is really important. Having this connected trail system is really important. Having on-road protected bike lanes is an essential piece. And then having tools like a low-stress bike map, community groups, or just conversations with your neighbors about, hey, I want to try this. I've heard about a bike bus, or, let's take a group ride together. Talking to your neighbors and your community is a big part of it. And then I will pitch a big piece of it is to celebrate and to come together and get to know each other. We've been hosting Breakfast on the Bridge for many years. I think this is the 17th annual, but that might just be the 17th annual time that we've celebrated Bike Month in Cincinnati. There's been advocates for a long time, but Breakfast on the Bridge is one way that we celebrate. We encourage people to bike to work or bike anywhere on Friday, May 15th. That's this year's National Bike to Work Day. It's part of National Bike to Work Week, which is this week. So we're encouraging folks to get out early, greet us or meet us on the Purple People Bridge on the Newport side. And we're going to have this year 27 organizations set up on the bridge from 7 to 9 a.m. you know, ready to meet the public, talk about how they can get involved with their organization. And these are organizations that host group rides, and you know, the Cincinnati bike polo team will be there, Queen City Bike, Mobo Bicycle Co-op, Ride the Cove, which is a group that does group rides in Covington. They're all going to be there. So, like, kind of back to that advocacy piece, this is a great place to learn how you can get involved with the bike community, but also walking and running. Cincy Girls Who will be there. The Newport Aquarium will be there, Newport on the Levee, so many individuals. And it's a really fun way to see folks that you maybe know, your friends and your neighbors, and to meet new people. But we have free coffee from Trailhead Coffee, and then pastries provided by North South Baking, which are just top-notch. They're so beautiful. So yeah, it's a fun, fun morning for people to get involved and meet new people and celebrate riding your bike.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a couple more questions that have come in from Michael. What kind of cycling infrastructure exists on the west side of Cincinnati? Who wants to tackle that one?
I can give it a try. So there's not as much on the west side, unfortunately. That's one of the interesting things about the Crown and the Tour de Crown is people get to experience firsthand what it's like to ride on the Wasson Way, but then to also ride, you know, the first year we had people on State and Beekman. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted a bunch of volunteers to help folks navigate that course, because the west side really doesn't have a whole lot. We have the Mill Creek Greenway Trail, which has been around for a while. It connects Solway Park to the Mill Creek. It runs along that for a while. But that's a very important piece of the Crown. It's something that we're working on currently, working very closely with community councils, the Port of Cincinnati, the City of Cincinnati, to find the best route for the west side piece. So the Crown will connect to the west side. It will ideally connect to the new viaduct that's coming in. We'll make use of the Lick Run Greenway. That's a beautiful trail system. If you're looking for recreation trail riding, that's a great place to take your bike or to walk. So I think, like, the west side, you know, you can find some lower stress streets over there, but yeah, not a ton of bike infrastructure yet.
Okay.
But, yeah.
We also have a question from Larry. Is there a plan to expand Bike Month to multimodal personal transportation to include scooters, skateboards, et cetera? And Kat, do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I like that question, and I want to hear your plan for doing that, Larry. I know that all wheels are often welcome on recreational group rides throughout Bike Month, certainly on the bridge. We see a lot of folks on scooters and skateboards too. There's a group called Social Push Cincinnati that meets up usually in Covington for group rides with all of those wheels and more, which might be interested in talking with you about that. But you do bring up this question of expanding beyond bikes. When we think about mobility justice and how we get around, we have to think about people who are in wheelchairs, who are in power scooters, who do not drive and will not drive and still must be connected to be a part of community. So I would encourage you to continue to think about how this infrastructure moves us all, but also who it leaves out and how we fill those gaps, both with talking to community council, but also talking to our neighbors and seeing what folks need.
Yeah. Well, I know we talked a little bit about this, but I want to talk some more about some of the new bike infrastructure in the works. Who can tell us about the Oasis Trail and what it connects and what's going on there? Is that going to be you, Caitlin?
Yeah, I can attempt to take this. This is an enormous project that has been many, many years in the works, and this will be a part of the Crown. It'll also be the last leg of the Ohio to Erie Trail, which is 326 miles from north to south across the state of Ohio. So that'll be like the final leg into Cincinnati. But it'll connect Sawyer Point to Lunkin Airport, like Friendship Park down at the bottom of the far east side of Sawyer Point. And there's an old rail line there that we've all come together to get the right-of-way, get the funding. So planning is underway currently. And It's hard to say exactly what year they will break ground, but the construction of it will probably only take like a year and a half, maybe. But yeah, they're working on the best, most graceful route from Sawyer Point to Lunkin Airport, but it will follow that rail line that exists there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Joshua, you mentioned this earlier, but the city's planning to add bike lanes as part of this overhaul of Gilbert Avenue between downtown and Walnut Hills.
Yes.
What's that going to look like, and what will that help connect for people who travel by bike?
Yeah, it'll be a really exciting piece of investment. So yeah, from downtown, kind of by that casino up through the Walnut Hills business district. And for me, I'm really excited for that piece. I think it's a really important connection from Walnut Hills, Evanston, some of that existing bike infrastructure that does exist into the downtown core. I think back to the earlier caller who's got me thinking around kind of protected bike lanes and OTR, like if we get that connected to Central Parkway, then you have this really streamlined connection kind of from a Hills perspective in particular. I think having that protected lane on Gilbert will be really, really critical, both for folks coming down the hill at higher speeds, people going back up the hill, having that protected infrastructure will be a key part of the crown and other pieces of infrastructure.
Yeah. I know the city also plans to build a bike path near MedPace's headquarters in Madisonville. Is that all about making it easier for more people to commute to work by bike? That's a big employer.
It's a very exciting piece of the puzzle. I think, as you've heard, there's a lot of different pieces and they're all slowly coming together. And I think in that Madisonville Red Bank piece, I think we'll connect to other pieces as well. So we're really excited to see all the pieces coming together.
Yeah. Well, and back to e-bikes, Sean, are you finding that a lot of people are looking for those to commute? Like, hey, I would love to commute by bike, but I might need a little power to help me?
Absolutely. Yeah. So downtown's in the basin and you got to climb in or out to go anywhere. So yeah. E-bikes help with that.
Yeah.
Commuting is just one reason to use it, though. I mean, e-bikes are very empowering. So you'll find yourself using it more to run errands, more for fun, but also a very good commuter. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now there's that fancy new program we talked about that you and the city are partnering on. And Caitlin, just very quickly, how does all this fit into the crown? Is it all about all these connections being able to feed into the crown?
Yeah, ideally, yes. And the crown is kind of just the beginning also. Like another project we're working on is the Mill Creek Triangle Trail, and the crown will connect to that, and that's going to be another 40-mile loop. So, you know, we think about like regional connectivity. So all across Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, but also into Indiana and beyond, and just as far as our imagination can go, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely all connects to the crown. You know, the loop is a nice it's a good connector. It's the outside of the wheel, and all of these bike lanes are the spokes. So,
yeah. Well, I have been talking with the owner of the Garage OTR, Sean Jenkins, Tri-State Trails Communication and Events Manager, Caitlin Sparks, City of Cincinnati Innovation Team Leader, Joshua Pine, and Mopo Bicycle Co-op Youth Coordinator, Kat Ruger. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.